It's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. Hey, and it's Dr. Lisa. Thanks for listening. I give a shit. You know, I do. I give a shit about everybody who's listening today. You know, I found out there was a whole bunch of people listening in this town in Japan, which is really, like, interesting. and just wonderful news. So I hope you guys are enjoying this, and a real special shout out. If you ever come to America and Bushwick, you let me know, because we'll get you on the air. You don't even have to learn English or anything. We'll just make face. I'll explain. I'll make up what I think you're saying. I think that would be a great interview. Very psychological. I was thinking about, you know, like, last week I was in such a good mood before the show went on, and today I'm feeling like, it's just interesting week to week. It's kind of a little bit therapy for me, too. I'm feeling a little overwhelmed, you know. I feel like I'm a little greedy about life sometimes. I think it's greediness. And, like, there's so many things I want to get done and so many things that I'm interested in, and, like, there's just too many people and there's just too much. It's just too fucking full. And on top of that, I get, like, sidetracked by trying to earn money and, getting cat food and shit like that. It's just too much. It's just too much. And I know you all feel the same way, and that's why I'm putting it out there. So do you, Jeremy, do you feel that way sometimes?
Yeah, of course, all the time.
All the time, yes. Right?
It's always constant.
So this is my guest today, Jeremy. I'm like really nervous. I'm going to say your name wrong. Will you say it? No problem, of course, because it's fucking Jeremy. Nothing's ever a problem. Say it, Jeremy. What is it?
My last name's Nguyen, so my full name is Jeremy Nguyen.
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 Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you about Jeremy. I am really excited to have him on here, just to even, like, get to spend time with him. Because Jeremy, I used to see a lot, when we were both on the Bushwick Daily. Jeremy was a cartoonist. He started a little after me, and I was the advice columnist. And actually, I was thinking about this today, because Katarina Kosis, who's just, I don't know, just so great that I can't even, like, I mean, that would take the whole show to tell you how much I love her. We even adopted her cat. Did you know that, Jeremy?
I didn't know
Phil
that.
And I no. adopted her and Kenny's cat. Anyway, she put us together, Jeremy, but you know what the thing was? I mean, it was impossible because I didn't have enough time to give you to do your thing.
Oh,
remember
right,
that?
Right. We did
it was frustrating. Did you hate me then? You hated me then.
No, I didn't even know you. but yeah,
we
it
got
was
to
fun doing illustrations
this.
For your column. It was great.
Yeah, no, it was a great idea, and I wished it. I'm like so regretful that it didn't work out. Well, not regretful, but it would have been great. But
to keep it going as a constant thing.
Yeah, it was really visionary of Katarina. But the problem was, really, is that I used to write those columns like the night before or something like that. And there's
right.
no way that, you know, it was ever going to work. But the vision, I didn't get how great the vision was at the moment. Otherwise, I would have rearranged my whole life, maybe. And it would be different today.
Yeah, you always had great advice, and it was awesome.
But it was fun. It was fun. And then also, Jeremy wound up doing, like, this brilliant... I'll have to post that, too. He did this set, which we wound... It's too hard to explain here, but he did the set for my TV pilot, What is it? Couples Therapy with Dr. Lisa. So Jeremy and I have been colleagues and friends for a while. Mm-hmm. And Jeremy's career has, like, totally taken off. He's only, how old are you, Jeremy?
27.
It's like, okay, so here's the thing that I have to get this out of the way first. We have to talk about how great Jeremy's career is going at age 27, mostly because he's ridiculously talented, but also because he fucking works his ass off, is totally committed to his work, and on top of that, he is like the most efficient, easiest person to work with ever, I think.
Thank you.
Thanks. And so what I was telling Jeremy before he came on is that I wanted to just start off by telling him how jealous I was of him in this particular way, in these particular ways that we can discuss. But before we get into that, because I want to find out the truth. I got to resolve this. This is therapy for me. Thank you, Jeremy. But let's just talk about Jeremy's career, because you can see the work. He's a cartoonist. He is just a font of creativity. A lot of your work, Jeremy, I think, is sort of observational, where you make fun of, like, gentrification and pop culture and how dumb millennials are.
Of course, yes.
Even the millennials. Well-trodden
ground.
Well, oh, see, there's a little bit of modesty there. No, Jeremy, you have a very unique perspective. But it's a relatable. It's, well, if you call it well-trodden ground, it's only because it's very relatable and everyone. I'm sure the people that laugh at it the most are probably the people who you're actually poking fun of, do you think?
Totally.
They probably love you, right?
Right, yeah. No, there's something I heard about. People say this about Veep, but it sort of applies to my comics. But Veep makes fun of people in Washington, D.C., and a lot of D.C. people don't think it's about them. They think it's about the other guy.
Right.
And that's exactly how it is.
So do you wind up, like, having conversations with people where, you know, they're talking about them and they don't get it? Do you get amused by that? Does that happen?
Right, of course. Yeah, no, I mean, I've definitely lifted a lot of my comics from people I know, from people, places and people that I see all the time. And they're usually either the biggest critics of it or the biggest fans of it.
Oh. Do you ever piss anybody off, like that it's too close to home?
Early on, I pissed off mostly white people, just because I've called out white people.
I mean, just because you actually use the word white?
Yes.
Oh, and so have you just avoided that?
I've avoided it since.
But it's implied.
It's totally implied.
You just dialed it down. That's how our society functions.
Right,
sort of like passive aggressive. It's not your fault, though, Jeremy. You started in the right place.
Well, yeah. Now, I mean, at first I was criticized for doing comics about hipsters, and I've just basically rid that word out of all the comics I've done. And basically, whenever I say the phrase "young transplants," that's who I'm referring to. Is young people, anybody living here?
Well, I just want to remind you that before we really get into asking Jeremy some really hard questions, deep questions, that you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, which is an amazing radio station. We just got our I always get stuck on this. It's our nonprofit status. So you can now donate money to us and make it a tax break. I think Donald Trump would love that. He's got to find out about this. I think he should give us a couple million bucks, you know? Just a couple of million.
Yeah, why not?
And then I don't think that would even get us to say, you know, good things about him. Or at least not me. Whatever. Oh, look at this. Now we're getting in weird territory. So, Jeremy, let's just define your career a little bit. So you have this very unique point of view. You wanted to be a stand-up comic when you were a kid, or?
That's right, yeah. Well, I've always drawn all my life, and then I found out that I was a little bit funny in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I even joined, like, a comedy group with my friends, and we would just talk about comedians we liked. We weren't at all really funny, so we would just...
You mean you weren't a comedy group where you didn't actually, like, do comedy or perform comedy? You just talked about comedy?
Right, yeah. It was basically, like, we would
so
watch
nerdy.
The Chappelle Show.
That's
we would
so damn
watch...
nerdy.
Yeah.
It was, really?
It was like a high school club
that we would
do during, like, the free period.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. No one ever dated any girls, right?
No, I had a girlfriend. Yeah,
you're probably the only one.
No, I mean, I think
people had girlfriends,
right? Yeah, people were cool. I think nerdy, you know, that was the time period when nerds were getting cool, and that was like the standard of man.
You were probably the nice guy, right? The one that the girls could sort of trust.
Sure.
You treated them well. Yeah. Jeremy's like, you know what Jeremy's like? Jeremy's like, you're a bad kid and you bring Jeremy home to your parents and then your parents tell you they wish you were more like Jeremy. That's what Jeremy's
that's
like.
That's happened once. Yeah. But no, I mean, of course I've done bad things in school too, you know.
No, you're perfect. I know. So anyway, so Jeremy for the last, Jeremy became like this, I mean, your work was like, has been so popular on the Bushwick Daily. You did like a weekly cartoon that you made into books.
Yes.
And how long were you doing the weekly cartoon at the Bushwick Daily?
I've done that for about 3 years.
3 years. And then just recently, Jeremy broke through to the New Yorker. and you had your first, I posted on my Facebook page, his first cartoon published.
Right. First and only.
First and only, but are you going to the meetings there every week?
Yes, I've been going in and, you know, I've sold a few more, but
you have.
I haven't been printed yet.
Oh, I see. That's how it works, mm-hmm. right? And Bob Mankoff, who's like kind of famous.
Yeah, great guy.
He just left. He retired.
Yeah, he's retiring in actually 2 weeks from now.
And so who's going to be on there?
It's a young woman named Emma Allen. I haven't met her, but I hear she's amazing, and she actually writes about Bushwick herself in The New Yorker. She's written about a few
of
the bars.
Where does she live?
I'm actually not sure where she lives, but writes about Brooklyn.
So do you get to go to the go-away party for Bob Mankoff? That's going to be awesome.
I didn't know he had a going-away party, but, you know, I've only been doing it for 3 months.
Well, you want to have one? We'll have one. Invite your high school friends. So anyway, this past, 6 months, and then you had this really nice interview in Bedford and Bowery by Sam Patwell, and I have cribbed a couple of things from that. Thank you, Sam. But really, your career has really changed dramatically in the last, he's nodding yes, in the last how many months?
I went completely freelance from my day job in December of last year, 2016.
In the past less than a year. So why don't you tell us like what happened and where you are now? What were you doing and where are you now, Jeremy?
Yeah. I had a fantastic day job. I was there for about 4 or 5 years. Called Comixology.
Mm-hmm.
And Comixology is fantastic. They sell comics online and digitally for your iPad, Kindle, everything.
So it's a service. It's like a app service.
It's an app retailer for digital comics.
Retailer. Yes. And what did you do there?
So they had proprietary technology where, you know, it's going to sound boring here, but basically you can read your comics.
That's why
on
I wanted
phone.
You to talk about it. Yes.
Yeah, and they have this awesome technology where you can double tap on the page and it'll zoom in to a panel, and then you would swipe and it would move to the next panel.
Oh, that's so nerdy.
It's very nerdy, but it allowed you to read comics, on your phone.
So did you work on that
without having to pinch and zoom? Yes. So I worked on the technology for that and guiding people through the stories of all the comics that we offer.
That sounds cool.
Great day job. Fantastic. The only reason I left was because I was just getting bogged down with too much freelance, and I was starting to have to say no to a lot of things. And as an artist, saying no is a good problem to have. But
what did you say no to? Tell me one thing you had to say no to.
It was just like, just boring freelance assignments.
You'd rather be working on your freelance, of course.
Right, of course, exactly.
So you were getting enough assignments, you thought, hey, it's time to, I'm 27 years old, it's time to move on.
Right, yeah, and then, so it was just getting, trying to figure out how to have a day job and a freelance career at the same time just got too crazy. I was staying up way too late, and I just wanted to, it's something that a lot of the my coworkers at Comixology did. They eventually moved on and started doing comics for like Adventure Time and Steven Universe and all these other great publishers.
Oh, so that's cool. So you had kind of had your peeps, a little bit of a support group, a little bit of you saw what happened kind of thing.
Totally, and there's still some great artists who work there now that, you know, are. I predict we'll be going to
be
the same
stuck
way.
There forever.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I think that they're going to be able
it's
to break
joke.
Out.
It's a joke.
Themselves.
It's a joke from a mean my mean spirited side. I told you I was really stressed today. So, you know what, Jeremy? You are so like nice and decent that you're making that like it makes me want to be mean. Which is like I take full responsibility for. It's my problem, but
I try and channel.
Not blaming you.
Anger
I'm not blaming you. You just I
into
just
yeah. the comics into the work.
Yeah, and I'm trying to, and I'm just channeling right into all your listeners. Fuck off, everybody! Yay. So what's your what? So you left your job. They were probably very. You know, proud, pleased for you, and so what happened? What's your life like now?
My life is like any other freelancers. It's a lot of naps. It's a lot of hanging out in the house. It's, you know, I don't have a cat, but it's a lot of buying cat food for myself and for my girlfriend for groceries and stuff. And then
so you
doing
buy cat food for you and your girlfriend,
right?
Even though you don't
in
have
the
a cat, that
sense.
Means that you're eating.
Yes,
cat
yes.
food. You and your girlfriend, because yes. you're not making any money. Yeah, I got
right.
it.
Yeah.
No. So what happens? So you live with your girlfriend.
That's right. Yes. She's actually my domestic partner now. We got unified at City Hall in January.
Wow, you had like an official.
Right. Yeah, we paid the $35 and got the license. And now we're, you know, it is weird. I do refer to her as my girlfriend a lot just because it's kind of strange calling her my partner. We're not used to that yet.
Yeah, no, not in our society. Not
right.
yet. No matter what. But so why, what was that having to do with your freelance? Your insurance, right?
That's right. Exactly.
It was insurance.
Insurance. We did it on like inauguration day, so there were a lot of people at City Hall getting married and getting, you know, we walked up to the license counselor or whatever, the clerk, and she was like, "This is the most domestic partnerships I've done in a single
wow.
3-hour period ever."
So what was that conversation like? What does your girlfriend do for a living?
My girlfriend's a software engineer.
And she has like a staff job with nice insurance and
great,
shit.
Great yeah. job, yeah.
So do you think she's resentful at all that like you get all the freedom and she's paying all the she gets all the insurance?
Or? I don't know. I mean, you know, there's people who aren't artists who don't understand that lifestyle or they don't see that for themselves. And I think she knew that being a software engineer is – you know, that's part of being a software engineer is being part of a team, being part of an office.
So you guys are some way more mature than me. Okay. So what was that conversation like? What was she like? Are you fucking kidding me? You want to be a domestic partner to get my insurance, not get married? Like how'd that go down?
It's actually pretty amicable because in our household, we sort of gender swap the roles. I'm more of the cook. She's not really much of a cook herself. I tend to enjoy doing that sort of thing and buying the groceries and figuring out what we're having for our meals.
Oh.
Yeah. And so, like, being able to stay home and, you know, take care of that and not have that day job is actually
Good for both
exciting.
Of you.
Yeah.
And how about getting married? Was that part of it?
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get married down the line at some point.
Oh, really? Okay.
Right, yes, definitely. We're just...
Too young.
Too young. I'm 27, she's 25.
Oh, 25.
25, 24, I'm 25. In the great...
Oh, yeah, 25. It just seems ridiculous, right?
Right, yeah. And, you know, we don't want to deal with our parents about this right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's all very sensible.
Very sensible.
Yeah,
it's so very planned, very strategic,
very sensible. So that's what I was wanting to say, Jeremy. My fantasy. Here's my counter transference. My fantasy about you is that you're just like so organized and so like what's the word, like so grounded that you kind of always know how to make good decisions.
Sure, I'd agree with that to some extent.
And that, like, your like brain works like, you know, I get in trouble here because I accidentally forget shit. I mean, I don't mean to. I feel like I am always, not just here, but at every job I've had. I mean, I feel like I'm always. This has been bothering me lately, Jeremy. You need to help me because, I got this new job, a part-time job where I'm putting on, where I'm making dummy books at a book publishing company. Yes. And I feel like I'm always overcompensating because I'm afraid that I'm forgetting something or not doing something right. And it's getting in my way at this fairly low level job. And so I just see you as somebody who like doesn't go through any of that. You're just like, your brain works very efficiently and you show up on time and you don't ever like mix up the dates.
I know. I actually showed up early here and then walked around for about 10 minutes until you showed up. And I was like, all right, well, okay.
Yeah, there you go. So like, how is that what it's like for you?
Well, I mean, your problem sounds like it's affecting, other people too.
Yeah.
A lot of my problems are things that I try and contain to only affect me. Stuff like, you know, my girlfriend and I, we took a trip, but, you know, I showed up, to Penn Station, 2 or 3 hours early, but I had forgotten my passport, so I couldn't get on our plane.
Oh man.
But since I was early enough, I could go back home.
Fuck. So, that's what I'm saying.
Right. I do stuff like that. I lose my wallet all the time, keys. I never know where they are. But yeah, I try and reduce as much problems for other people as I can.
I do too. I'm just not capable.
Right. It's always something you attempt to do.
That's always something I'm trying. That's what I'm saying. I don't think I have it. It's just, you know, I've actually gotten better. It's just not like my nature. And that may sound like an excuse, but I don't think it is because I work so hard to try to make up for it. And I have to accept that it's not my nature. Otherwise,
right,
I would be like a homeless person, like I thought I was going to be when I was your age.
Yes. No, I think about that all the time, too. I mean,
do you?
We can be homeless easily and quickly.
So are you concerned about finances now? Or are things okay? We aren't working?
The reason why it took so long for me to leave my day job was so that I could save up a ton of money and be able to go at this. You know, I started applying cartoons to The New Yorker, but that's never a done deal. You never know if you're going to get in. Some people take months and months mm-hmm. to get in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was banking on. I was like, all right, I've got the savings. I can take the year to start submitting cartoons.
How did you get a sense that you were going to be, do you have a sense of New Yorker and stuff like that? Like you knew that it was going to work out or...
Well, yes.
I mean, I'm sure you did a lot of research, so you know this shit, so...
Right, and doing the comics for Bushwick Daily, I always say that it's, like, almost a training ground for somewhere like The New Yorker.
Uh-huh.
I figured I had the sensibility of the magazine already down with Bushwick Daily Comics and Stranger Than Bushwick.
Oh, okay.
And then I had some friends who were applying, and my humor aligned with their humor. And going in to submit seemed like the next logical step.
Mm-hmm. So you apply and then they ask you to come in?
What I mean by apply is basically going in and submitting to Broad Hancock.
Because they have like an open door thing every week, is that it?
Or? That's right. They haven't been doing it lately just because Bob is retiring. But Bob had this open door policy for any cartoonist who thought that they had cartoons that would feel publishable in The New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
And he did this as a way to open up to diverse voices and people who saw the New Yorker as like a gatekeeper. So he was like, you know, gates open. Why don't you just come in?
It's great. It's great. Hey, you guys, if you want to call in and help us out here, I need some help today. We're at 718-928-9732. That's 718-928-9732. I promise I'll be nice to you. I promise. So if you want to call in, if you got a question for Jeremy, because he knows that whole comic thing, you know, you probably could get some good advice from him. So Jeremy, here's what I need to know. I need to know, like, how did you get this way? Did your parents love you, or, like, what happened?
I think they loved me at a certain point.
And then they realized.
Well, yeah, what I mean by that is, you know, I had always done art as a young person, you know, in high school and in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the cliche, stereotypical Asian parents who didn't want their child to be an artist. They wanted him to be a doctor, engineer, mm-hmm. whatever. But I think the moment that I proved to them that I could do this was getting scholarships to go to college for it.
Oh, wow.
Right. And, you know, once your Asian parents see that they can pay less tuition, then they're all for it. And they started supporting me.
Were they excited about it when you got scholarships? Did that prove something to them?
Totally. It was a
game changer.
Game changer. Definitely. Definitely.
With your relationship with them.
Totally. You definitely nailed it on the head. It was like a crazy scholarship. It was, I won a competition in my district in California, and it was sponsored by Southwest Airlines, and they would fly you out to Washington, D.C., where your art piece was going to hang up in this, like, tunnel that connects the House of Representatives and the Senate building.
Fuck.
And this is everything.
Wow.
Students in high school do this all over the country. So I was there with hundreds and hundreds of other high school students.
Wow.
Who had artwork hanging in this particular space.
What was that like? How old are you? Were you like a senior?
I was going into my senior year, so I was a junior when this happened.
Wow, what was that like?
It was incredible. Like, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I met my congressman in D.C. Turns out he's actually kind of a shitbag these days. But it's exciting when you don't know what politics are.
Should we say his name, or I don't care?
I mean,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
I don't even think he's part of the Senate anymore.
Oh, but, all right. Yeah.
But yeah, stuff like that just turned my
parents. So like you got a free plane trip and a hotel and all that?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Wow, and you met, like, all these kids?
Yeah, you meet all these other students.
That must have been amazing. So did that help you get a scholarship to college?
Right. So if any student were to win this, then the college that I had wanted to go to, Savannah College of Art and Design, they actually offered scholarship for students who place in these competitions.
Wow. Really? Wow. So that was this huge flashing green light for you, right?
Right. That was definitely like, this is where I have to, you know,
face
the direction I'm going. And
so cool. Were you doing cartoons then, or just more, like, were they, because the thing about your cartoons, and I think cartoons in general, is that they're conceptual, really. They're sort of like, they remind me of my ad-making days. They're sort of like visuals and headlines together.
Yes.
So it's a concept, whereas, like, you know, just, you know, making, you know, you could be making, and you, I know you do a lot of drawing and stuff like that, but this is why I say why I'm asking you, was cartooning always your thing?
Yeah, I've always been drawing, you know, pen and ink, you know, paper and pencil easily.
But making like scenes with ideas and things like that. Was that always part of it? The writing part?
Yeah, the writing part is a lot newer.
Okay.
Definitely. When I first moved to New York, the writing got a lot more intense, you know. The comics, they came from the BuzzFeed listicle era.
Uh-huh.
So I was just illustrating my own versions of listicles and the sort of things that I was seeing in Bushwick. I would just write down in a list and then illustrate it.
I see.
But you see these listicles when you're 20 years old and you're like, this is garbage. They're just, you know, they're GIFs put together with text. And I was like, maybe we can make these a lot prettier by illustrating them.
Oh, yeah. So in other words, you So it was the same basic idea. You just borrowed the writing.
Right. And that idea, you know, got popularized in this listicle form, but I'm sure that form has existed for decades and decades.
But it was a pop culture thing that caught your attention.
Yes.
So is there some kind of maybe outsidery thing that makes you laugh at pop culture?
Well, how do you mean?
Like, you know, maybe your background, maybe your Asian. I wanted to actually ask you about your Asian parents, what that means, because, so were your parents like really good at this? What, you know, I wish I had fucking, you know, it's funny because my stepson went to high school in New York, and he was always saying, you know, these kids with Asian parents, you know, there is a stereotype.
Oh, right,
for sure.
Right. Like the tiger mom sort of stereotype.
Yeah. So, did you have brothers and sisters?
I did have an older brother, yes.
And what does he do?
He was in the Air Force out of high school, and now he's, I'm not sure what he does. He works in economics, I think. Yeah, he's some sort of economist.
Oh, wow.
I guess.
Smart guy.
Right, yes.
So do you think that your parents were really, you know, were they disciplinarians, or what kind of upbringing did you have?
My parents are interesting because they're refugees of the Vietnam War.
Wow.
And they came to the United States when they were 15, 16 years old.
From Vietnam?
From Vietnam.
Wow, that's so intense.
Oh, yeah, totally. And
wow.
So, you know, they're basic. In my mind, I see them as Americans because they did a lot of their formative teenage years in the United States, in Nebraska.
Yeah. Oh, they came to Nebraska with their parents or families?
Basically, yeah. I think they were the two only Vietnamese families in Nebraska. So
do you have grandparents?
Yeah, I have.
I mean, alive, living grandparents.
Oh, you know what? I have one grandmother in Orange County who's alive.
So does she speak Vietnamese?
She's a school teacher, so she actually speaks English very well.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, but she came here with her children.
Yes, that's right.
Fucking
and my grandfather.
A, man.
Yeah.
So your parents were from Vietnam. So So what was that like? Was there a lot of Vietnamese culture in your upbringing?
Yeah, well, since they came so young, I feel like they were pretty lax on the whole, like, Vietnamese traditional upbringing aspect of my life and my brother's life.
Mm-hmm.
And they've always sort of tried to be the strict Vietnamese parents because they saw their own brothers and sisters doing that to their kids.
Ah.
They wanted us to sort of fall in line with them and... But the problem was is that we moved around a lot, so we weren't around Vietnamese communities all the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So why did you move?
My dad was a software engineer himself, and he was, prevalent during the dot-com crash eras, and he worked for IBM, and IBM had that famous big crash in the 90s. So his job as a semiconductor, making microchips was always...
I worked on NEC. I know a little bit about this.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah, business-to-business stuff. I know about this
very
shit. Semiconductors. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm very proud of my dad. He has, like, a patent on...
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So he moved around a lot because...
Just because the job, you know, job security at that time was unstable. And
he got laid off a lot. And how about your mom?
My mother, she didn't go to college after high school. She also had many jobs. She was a fashion designer at one point.
Wow. Oh, so she's an art type.
Right, yeah. I definitely get my drawing background from her.
So she drew a lot.
That's right. She would design dresses, and she was a seamstress. She then got her, you know, pharmaceutical degree. And then my parents both left their respective industries, and my dad became a real estate agent, and my mom became a notary public, and then they formed their own real estate business in California and got out right before the big housing crisis.
Oh, wow.
In 2009, yeah.
So, yeah. Did they meet here? They're both Vietnamese. Did they meet through a Vietnamese sort of, you know, community? Or
I think that's how it went down. What happened was my dad was my mother was sponsored by a church, and my dad had a godfather that brought him to the States. Mm-hmm. My grandfather on my dad's side was a surgeon, so he knew a lot of American doctors, and they were able to come here easily. My mom, not so much. She grew up in the country of Vietnam, and there's a few Vietnamese refugee stories of people taking fishing boats across the Pacific and being... She was one of them. She was found on a fishing boat.
Boat person. She was a goddamn...
I guess
that is really, really...
I think the U.S. military found her boat and picked them up.
Wow. Yeah. That is so... I don't know, mind-blowing. Like, I mean, Jesus.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, are you like incredibly... I mean, it's so impressive, right?
Of course. And they did that at 15, 14
is
years
that like,
old.
Is that like... it's unimaginable. Can you picture it?
I can picture it. The funny story is we went to see a movie about, like, refugees and Vietnamese... Vietnam War escapees. And we came out of it, and I was like, Mom and Dad, is that really what happened to you? And they were like, yes, that's what happened to us. And I was like, isn't that movie amazing? And they were like, yeah, it was all right. It was okay. But, you know, the experience was a lot more.
And look what they made happen. They made a lot happen in their lives.
Totally. They've done a lot.
So what is the secret? Can I go back and get adopted? Can I just like live with them for a while and maybe get some training? So are they like super hard workers, or like how did they make their lives happen in such a...
Yeah, I think they're just self-sufficient, and they've always been deliberate with the way they make their decisions in their lives, even when things like getting laid off and the market ceases to have your job exist. So they seem to adapt pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of the American way, is that you can really do anything, because obviously my parents did many things.
Right. So were you aware of that much when you were growing up, the fact that they were like from all that stuff from Vietnam, or like how, or did they, was that part of like, you know, why did they want you to achieve because of that, or like how did that work out?
So, whenever I talk about my parents being pretty lax on my art stuff, is because, like I said, my grandfather was a surgeon. He wanted his son, my dad, to be a doctor too. And my dad went to school for biology, and, you know, he has a degree in, I think, chemistry or biochemistry. But he himself couldn't see himself being a doctor, so I don't think he would want to actually inflict that upon his own children.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot more sympathy for his own kids not going into that field.
Mm-hmm. Did they keep an eye on your homework and stuff like that? Were you a good student?
Oh, yeah. I was decent, you know, 3.0 average, not a 4.0, but, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, were you pretty self-motivated?
Sure. I mean, I would say that I tried to be like the honor student, achieving high grades.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't ever that great at it. But, you know, I did things like I was on student government. I was a yearbook editor.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I had a ton of fun in high school.
Yeah. Oh, God. My parents would have been like, why can't you be more like Jeremy? Look at Jeremy. Jeremy.
Yeah, and then, like, the only AP class I had was art class. And so, you know, I was
because that's where your heart was, obviously.
Right, exactly.
So did you... Wow, but you were drawing a lot. So what about this is what I'm going to say. So tell me something about your rebellious side. There's no way that you don't have a rebellious side.
Oh, of course I have a rebellious
side.
Okay,
so let's hear it. What is it?
I mean, I thought doing the art stuff was rebellious enough.
Was it in your
In my mind? I mean, you know, I would skip school and, you know, go see movies and draw all the time and hang out with my girlfriend.
So you skip school a lot. That's rebellious.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I had like a shitty Honda or Toyota Camry that was like handed down to me after 10 years of service. But I would just, you know, it was great to have that 16-year-old freedom of just being able to drive anywhere when your parents are running their own business and can't really look after you.
So your parents weren't around a lot. They were at work a lot?
Yeah, they were. By the time I was in high school, they were doing their real estate thing and they were running this business of theirs. And so they do a lot of house showings and a lot of open houses on the weekends.
And they trusted you to take care of yourself?
I think so. Once at that point, my brother had gone into the military, and so they were more concerned about him coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq.
Holy shit.
That they sort of were like, at least Jeremy's safe here in Fremont, California.
Oh, man. How did that affect you when he went to Iraq?
Iraq, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. How did that affect you?
So that was, I mean, I might have been too young to understand it.
How old were you?
I was about 13, 14 years old. You know, freshman year in high school, 9/11 had happened maybe 4 or 5 years ago prior to that. But we were just more shocked that my brother went into the military at all. You know, he's about my size.
Which is, you know, small. No, not like tiny, but I mean, you know, you weigh 135, 40 pounds, something like that.
And he's like me. He's like a nerdy dude. You know, he plays a lot of video games and board games. I don't really. And he's, you know, he was into anime at the time. And it was just very strange to watch this nerdy older brother of mine who weighs maybe 100 pounds have to take whey powder in order to meet the weight requirement.
What do you think motivated him?
So he tells me that, you know, he just felt like he had gotten a lot of benefits of being an American, that he wanted to pay that forward and be in service to the United States.
Do you think he appreciated, like, what your parents went through and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. I think he appreciated it way more than I did as the older brother who saw all that firsthand. You know, he was born in 85 and, you know, saw all that, you know, happen in the 90s. So he definitely had a better world view than I did.
Or just, yeah, or like just a different time. So he was really emotional about it. So did everybody freak out when he went?
Yeah, everyone freaked out. We were like, why do you want to do this? It doesn't make sense. We're like, we're not going to see you for 2 or 3 years maybe. It was.
And he's going to such a scary place.
Totally. Oh,
so
yeah.
So what happened when he came
during
back?
During the Bush era. It was crazy.
I can't believe it. That must have been horrible. I mean, it must have been very difficult for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you
think
that was a life-altering event for you?
I think so. Definitely.
Yeah. How do you think it affected you?
Well, up until that point, I kind of saw us as synonymous people, that we were always, you know, the two brothers doing things together and hanging out.
Right.
You know, since we moved around a lot, we never had like a stable outside friendship besides each other. And so when he left, that's when I sort of surrogated that with having a girlfriend in high school. Without him, I definitely, you know, found my own interests that weren't his and discovered what I liked to do and what I wanted to be myself.
So you were really close to him.
Very close.
So when he left, you know, it's interesting. So here's how you're talking about it, Jeremy.
Sure.
So when I asked you about it, you were very positive. As you would be. Which is great. I applaud that. You know, you talked about that it was a good chance for you to have your own development.
Right. Definitely.
But I also wanted to know if you felt like abandoned by him or if it was just somebody that you were close to. Did you feel rejected? Was it painful? Come on, Jeremy. Let's hear your three-dimensional.
He was gone all the time, and I, you know, I didn't have anyone to talk to about my parents. And my parents is, you know, they ran their own business. And what I didn't say about that is that running your own business with your spouse can be really tough and really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would, you know, have their quibbles and all that, and
sure.
I wasn't able to talk about that with my brother. So what I would do is I would leave the house, you know, at 9 p.m. and just drive around town and maybe pick up my girlfriend and go see a movie during the week. And that was my life.
So it changed your life radically when he left,
oh,
right?
Oh, totally. Oh, my God.
And were you worried about him?
Very worried. I mean, all the time. You know, he was stationed in London after his service in overseas in mm-hmm. Afghanistan. And there was, like, a big subway bombing that happened maybe 20 miles outside of where he was staying on the London Metro. And it was just, like, you know, unpredictable at those times, mm-hmm. the terror attacks.
And so would you, like, did you hear from him? Did you watch the news? Or, like, was it on your mind all the time?
You know, I didn't know anything about what was going on mm-hmm. with the war. I don't think a lot of people did. So
not like they do now on the internet.
Not like they do now. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Not with the internet. So when he came back, how was that? Has he changed? Did it change him?
So when he came back, it was fantastic. I think he was almost like, you know, a war hero celebrated in my family just because nobody else had been in the war since the Vietnam War.
I sure.
know, I had, you know, my grandfather and I had a few uncles that served. But to see their son as an American military man, I think that was very impressive.
Mm-hmm. And how was he? Was he like...
He was gracious. He was very modest.
He was modest. Did it change him?
Yeah, he definitely grew up.
He was just a lot more mature.
He was an adult when I saw mm-hmm. him. And I actually... That was a night that I felt extreme jealousy of just because he was almost like... He was like the golden son returning.
Oh, wow.
And
so
everyone
what?
Wanted to talk to him and shake his hand and say hi. And
oh, it's know. Huge. Did your family have a party? What was it like?
Yeah, we had a little party at my grandma's place.
And like your whole family showed up? And
totally,
everything.
Yeah.
It must have been awesome. Are you really proud of him now? I mean,
oh,
I feel like I'm proud of him and I never even met. I'm like,
yeah.
You know, it just brings me back to the whole refugee thing, which... You know, is really upsetting for all of us, but must feel very. Does it feel personal to you?
That he served.
How America is handling that whole thing.
Yeah, it's very interesting how my brother came back and, you know, it's very strange because he's like. I always forget that he also served in the military.
Oh, right.
Just because he's a different person than what you think. Is like this alpha male jock, you know, buzz cut.
Right, right, right. So he still doesn't seem like that.
No, not at all.
Interesting.
Nowadays, you know, I mean, he lives in New York and he's very sartorial. He wears suits like even in the summer.
Oh, so you still see him a lot.
He's very
right?
fashionable. Yeah, yeah, I see
and
him.
Is he
enough.
Married or anything?
He's engaged.
Nice.
He's going to be married.
Congratulations. What's his
year.
Name?
Chris. Chris Nguyen.
Congratulations.
He's the best.
So, wow, this is, wow. So, okay, you know, we only have like 10 minutes left.
Oh, yeah, no
Didn't
kidding.
This go fast?
Yeah.
So fascinating
totally.
Hearing about, yeah, wow. I want to make sure that we get in all the plugs because you have a lot of stuff going on and a lot of stuff coming up. But let's just talk about one more thing, which
sure.
is, been thinking about, which is, so, is being Vietnamese like how is that part of your identity or is it or I wouldn't know how I would process that.
No, it's fine. I feel a little strange because being Vietnamese is almost non-existent in my life.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I don't think I know any other Vietnamese people I have not had a discussion like this. Do you know any Vietnamese, I mean, besides your relatives?
Sure, I know a few Vietnamese people in New York. I mean, it's just...
But like in Bushwick, like we hang out...
Not in Bushwick, no.
We hang out in some of the same
yeah.
circles. We definitely are a
There's
big
There's some Vietnamese
Bendai.
Restaurants in Bushwick that I'm not even, that I don't even go to.
So do you think about being Vietnamese very often?
Not really, no. I think, you know, I've been... Americanized.
You've been really Americanized.
Yeah, a lot of people say I'm whitewashed.
You are. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a good line. I never heard of that.
Oh, really? No kidding.
But like when you were growing up, was it different then? Was it harder being Vietnamese when you were a kid or like in high school, moving around? Things
in
like
high
that?
School, not so bad because we lived in the Bay Area. There's tons of Asians everywhere. It was
mm-hmm.
mostly dominated Filipino, and then San Jose is very Vietnamese. But growing up everywhere else, like we grew up in Austin, Texas and mm-hmm. Portland, Oregon. And I think mostly the kids pretty much understood that you were Asian, but I don't think I really got bullied for that.
No.
When I went to college, that was much more different.
What do you mean?
In Savannah, Georgia, you know, just have pickup trucks just call. You know, I'm not gay, but I was, I read gay to a lot of people, and I was called faggot a lot, and, you know, scrawny, you know, gay kid, whatever.
Was that hard, or?
Yeah, it was hard. You know, I don't even know how to describe it, because I'm not gay, so.
No, but was it threatening, or?
Yeah, definitely threatening, yeah.
Scary?
It's just strange to be called something, you know, you expect the racism, but then you got the homophobia instead. Yeah.
That's absurd. It's ridiculous.
Right? Yeah.
I hear you. But like in art school and shit, people are probably pretty cool about that shit.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah, they're fine.
Yeah. I just want to remind people again, why I have a chance to, that you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, the best radio station in the Western Hemisphere. It's Dr. Lisa here with Jeremy Nugan. Is that good?
Not at all.
That was terrible,
Gwen,
right?
Gwen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just one syllable.
Whatever. Gwen. See,
I
Gwen
overthought
Gwen,
it. Yeah.
So anyway, and go to our, you know, we're a nonprofit now. You can donate money and get a tax deduction. Yeah. So donate a lot of money. Go to our Patreon page on www.radiofreebrooklyn.com. And you can also, you know, people can actually donate money to this show, Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, if they just go to the show page and, like, there's a big green donate money page, you know, and they could just pay for the show. So let's get into, we have 8 minutes. Let's talk about what you have coming up, because you have a lot coming up, Jeremy.
That's right. Yeah.
So I have here that you... have something up at WeWork, something coming up at WeWork.
Right, so I'm a part of a group show at WeWork, South Williamsburg. I'm going to be showing a few of my Bushwick Daily cartoons.
And is there a reception for that?
Yeah, on April 27th there should be a reception.
At WeWork. And have something up at the Roger Smith Hotel.
Yeah, the Roger Smith has been amazing. They're an amazing family-owned hotel. I've got a full room just of murals that I've done for them on site, as well as a few pieces hanging with a group exhibition that exhibited here in Bushwick during Bushwick Open Studios at Cave Espresso.
Oh, cool.
We've moved that show over.
A whole show with additional murals.
That's right.
And what's the address there?
They're like on 48th
Street. You don't even have enough. See that, Jeremy? You're not perfect. Look at that.
Right. They're on 48th Street on Lexington. Three blocks north of Grand Central.
Yeah. Susan Hamburger, somebody also artist. Bushwick artists also been on the show. She had a solo show there as well. It's a great place to show your work.
It's fantastic.
Really,
yeah.
Really great. And I love it because you also get a lot of people that don't necessarily always go to see art. You get a lot of consumers.
A lot of business suit guys.
Yeah. And is there did you do something else too? What about a lot of stuff floating around that the New Yorker has bought?
Right. So I don't, you know, they never tell you when they're going to print cartoons, but it's exciting.
So you just have to look every week?
Right. You just have to look every week.
So is it like, oh no, I'm going to look?
Yeah. Sometimes you're not in, but it's fine. They've already bought the cartoon. It's great.
So what's the biggest stressor since you've gone from having a staff job to freelance? What is the hardest part?
I think the hardest part is, you know, just having a constant stream of work to do and finding clients who want to work with you. Being an illustrator is difficult because you sort of have to be in a certain lane of illustration, and you can't really experiment or stray from a certain look or a certain type of client without changing your brand entirely.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's tons of illustrators out there, so these art directors, they're great, but they have, you know, it's like a buffet. They can have, you know, they can have, they can go all vegetarian, or they can have an entire plethora of artists at their disposal. So you kind of have to show them a brand, a personality, an identity, that they mm-hmm. can know what to use you mm-hmm. for.
And you kind of have to stay. It also, I mean, you can do it. I mean, you have plenty of ways to, you have plenty of creative opportunities to do creative things. But for this, you need to be in a particular box. You need to keep your work.
For the New Yorker?
No, I mean, as an illustrator.
As people, an illustrator,
the
yes.
work has to be, you know, fairly predictable. I was an art director. And if,
right.
when you're paying an illustrator client money, it has to
You have to know what you're going to get, kind of, to some degree. They have to see exactly what you bring to the table so that they don't have to pay extra if
to
you
get
mess
it redone.
Up. Yeah.
Well, or just to get it redone, which is a very hard, I mean, part of being, I think, you know, and I think that's what we've been talking about is that, you know, you're really... got your shit together and you know you're reliable and stuff like that, and I think that's a really being easy to work with is a big part of the job. No,
definitely. I mean, there's three things you have to be. You have to be fast, you have to be good. You could be two of these things: fast, good, or nice. And if you have two of them, you can work. But if you have all, you know, I try and have all three of them so that
yeah,
I can get
yeah
more.
And you're young,
yeah,
so if anything goes. So, but I see you having a pretty big vision on your own. Like, do you see like having your own set of books or something? I mean, you said that this is we only have 4 minutes, so I got to keep this short. But you're done. You're done with the Bushwick aspect. You've done. You're finishing
right.
your three books, your third book soon, and
yes,
you're
going
to move on
yeah.
from that. But do you see like I see you as publishing your own. Or having your books published, like
yeah, no, definitely.
Is that kind of more?
I have
of...
a few things percolating. I want to see how far the New Yorker cartoons get me, but in addition to that, I'm doing
some
you know, personal graphic novels just on my own.
Oh, graphic novels. So
that's
you're really
right.
getting into the writing part.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, that's.
I
wonderful.
Never actually really considered myself that much of a narrative. Cartoonist, I've just been mostly making a lot of jokes. Uh-huh. So it's going to be fun to explore uh-huh. writing a fiction
mm-hmm.
piece.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you in the beginning. So does being Vietnamese, does that, or is that just me? This is so racist, I'm afraid.
Fine. No worries.
Does that give you some kind of objectivity to be more of an observer, you think? Or maybe not literally being...
I think I get the benefit of not being white.
Benefit and maybe being teased a little makes you understand what being an
yes,
outsider is.
Definitely.
So I want to give like this really big shout out for people to stay tuned to the show that's on after this one, because it's really like amazing. It's called it's by Alan Danziger. See, I'm not. It's now you definitely aren't going to take that personally because you can see that I. Screw up everybody's name. So anyway, he does this really great show called Mix. I just had it up here. Like, I'm freaking out because I'm afraid I'm being disorganized. So now I'm actually... See, this is what...
It's coming to fruition now.
Yeah, I make my own problems and I'm making one. But anyway, it's a mixtape show and it's really, really funny. What he does is he has people bring in their mixtapes and then he plays them and, you know, it's like he has them on and
they probably tell stories. Yeah.
Yeah. And tell stories. So I want people to stay and listen to that. If you're listening to this, you are definitely going to love that because we understand at Radio Free Brooklyn, that's how they program things. And I want to make a big point of that you should stay on and listen. So we're going to bring the show in on time. Jeremy, you are such a light, a breath of fresh air.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you made me feel really good today.
Oh, I'm glad.
I feel much better after this. It was a really good session. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you,
me
Jeremy.
Too.
I feel like I have been to therapy. I don't know if I helped you, but you definitely helped me. And so I feel like I'm way ahead of the game.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. So we have 2 seconds. Let's sing. What do you say?
Okay. Nestle. I'm just
Let's
drinking.
Sing ads.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, let's sing ads.
What products are you into lately?
Dr. Lisa gives a shit.